listening to the Gridiron Growl Podcast from ChompTalk.com.
Welcome to the Gridiron Growl Podcast, Mark McCloud Review. Follow me on Twitter at McCloud Live. Certainly follow us with everything that we're doing at Gridiron_Growl and at Chomp Talk for the latest on the University of Florida Gators. Be sure to go to ChompTalk.com. I am joined by Jake Hitt. Jake, how are you this evening?
I'm doing well, Mark. It seems last couple weeks, every time we do this, we got something new to talk about that's not the game.
Yeah, we scratch out a few notes on things to talk about, at least I do, and there's always something that jumps ahead of that, at least
it's
twice.
It's always like, it's like when you're writing a story and then something completely unexpected happens when you didn't think the outcome was going to, it's like writing a story, thinking the game's over, then the team comes back and you got to wipe the whole thing clean.
Happens all the time in this business. Well, Florida has a new football coach, Billy Napier. No surprise to anybody listening to this podcast. That has been the one name mentioned throughout this entire process, which is very unlike what happened when Florida, say, hired Jim McElwain. So a very different day. I like the hire. I'm going to go through all of that. Let me first be polite and give you the first take on Billy Napier and your thoughts on the hire.
Yeah, so, I mean, it seems like the logical choice in terms of what Scott Strickland was looking for, looking for a guy who can build and sustain success. He did that in Lafayette, looking for a guy who can recruit the state, can recruit in, among the big boys in terms of what's going on. He's proven to be able to do that by coaching at Clemson and at Alabama. And then thirdly, you know, he's a guy who runs an organized program and is very detail oriented. I think that from what's been put out about him, that he runs his program like Nick Saban runs his. So that's something you kind of want to emulate. It happened at a group of five schools. So you just hope all the good things you hear translate over into a Power Five opportunity.
Exactly. You know, the things I like about Napier are the following. He's got a lot of experience as an assistant and at different levels with some different schools. Obviously, started at Clemson, worked his way up from a GA position to an offensive coordinator position for a couple years. Things didn't work out as much there as you would like, obviously, but boom. He ends up in Alabama. Nick Saban says, yeah, we'll bring him over here. Offensive analyst. Then he follows Jim McElwain over to Colorado State for a year and ends up back at Alabama for 4 years. So, you know, got a lot of time with Bama. The other thing, now he's been a head coach for 4 years, taking a program that needed a rebuild, and he rebuilt it. A couple things that jump out at me from his resume. He's coached quarterbacks a few years. Wide receivers, tight ends. He's been a recruiting coordinator. And, of course, he's kind of run the Louisiana offense. So that work as an offensive coordinator, not only was it Clemson, and not only was it at Arizona State, but he also has done so at Louisiana. So, you know, I like that. I like the fact that this guy's, 19 years? Am I correct on that? 19 years as a coach. But, you know, many years as an assistant coach, working his way up, doing some different things, and now he goes to Louisiana, and you can see the process with the rebuild, and you can see it in player development. Let me go through this real quickly, Jake, and then I'm going to get you back in here. One thing that I like to look at is how are they developing the players? Well, I mean, I don't know a ton about the Sun Belt Conference in terms of, you know, watching these guys on television week after week. But look, it's a pretty competitive conference. You're talking Coastal Carolina, Arkansas State, Appalachian State, Troy, and Louisiana. I mean, those are some pretty good teams in that conference. So the competition is pretty intense over there. But also the player development. His first year at Louisiana, he had one offensive guy make first team all Sun Belt Conference, and two guys from the offensive unit made it to the second team. So three total guys. I didn't even look at third team. But in 2019, on the first team offensive unit, he had two offensive players, two special teams players. On the defensive side, he had two off. On the second team, he had two more offensive players and three defensive players. So he went from three players making all Sun Belt Conference in year one, and I'm talking, again, only first and second team. I did not look at the third team, to nine. So he tripled his output there. Last year, they had nine again. They had one offensive player on the first team, one on special teams, four offensive players on the second team, two defensive players on that second team. So, and a special teams player as well. So, again, staying with nine, and this year there are going to be quite a few players making it as well. He's had a few guys drafted now, including Robert Hunt, who was a tremendously regarded offensive lineman when he came out of Louisiana. And he ended up being a very high draft pick going to Miami. Yeah, so this guy's really, when I look at it, those are some of the things that I really like about it. And we can discuss all day long. Well, he hasn't been a head coach long enough. That's fine. If that's your take, you're listening to this, that's fine. I've got no issue with that. But it's been 4 years, and he's been around Alabama, Clemson, Colorado State, Arizona State for a year, South Carolina State for 1 year. So he's been around a little bit within the SEC, the ACC, and elsewhere, and, you know, has picked up some things, and I'm sure met a lot of coaches who he's worked with, especially when you go back and you look at his time at Alabama and even Clemson, some real quality coaches that he's worked with along the way.
Yeah, and you know, Mark, he's also been a guy who can pull in some really good talent when he's had a significant logo on his chest. I mean, listen to some of the names he pulled while he's at Alabama and while he's at Clemson. You know, Cam Robinson, NFL offensive lineman. Calvin Ridley, NFL wide receiver. Jerry Jeudy, NFL wide receiver. Taj Boyd, one of the best quarterbacks in Clemson football, at least in recent memory. I mean, these are some guys, and even Trayvon Diggs, who was a wide receiver when he came out of high school but turned into a DB when he was in college. But, I mean, the guy's been able to get some really, really talented players. And, like you said, he's been around the block a couple times as a coach. I do love how he left Clemson, reportedly because he punched Dabo Swinney in the face. Not because I hate Dabo Swinney, but just, like, not to encourage violence. Like, that's just sounds like such a college football thing to happen.
Yeah.
You know, Clemson fires assistant for physical altercation. And it was probably something they said in the moment, and I don't know. But, you know, he might only have been a head football coach for a couple of years, but he's been an assistant for a long, long time. I think what some people worry about with him is it's a group of five school, and also it could end up being just like a Dan Mullen clone. You know, he is a Saban disciple. I mean, you could go back and forth on who he really is because he's coached under three different guys. But, you know, you worry about the offense being, you know, this running offense and him being stubborn with it. And you worry about things like that. And they've played a lot of close games, maybe games they shouldn't have been that close in. So you do have some worry there. I mean, every college football coach, you assume some risk unless there's some absolutely proven guy like a Lincoln Riley, who is now the head coach at USC. So, like I said, it seemed like a logical hire. It seemed like Scott Strickland knew who he wanted from the outset, made sure he got him, and now he is on campus. And, you know, Scott really had to make sure he nailed this hire because his job is on the line. Not many guys get two coaching searches. They definitely don't get a third unless the guy retires or leaves for another job.
Yeah, no question. And I like what you said there because, again, we don't know how successful he's going to be. Nobody can tell you that. Look, we all get that it's kind of a crapshoot, really, when you're hiring coaches. The resume can look good. There are things in the resume that we can question, and just about every coach you're going to hire – that's the case. There's rarely ever a coach that you bring in and say, that's a home run hire. I'll tell you, honestly, there were two coaches that I can say that about. Two. Urban Meyer, Steve Spurrier. Those were two coaches, when they were hired, I had no doubt whatsoever, based on their trajectory, that, oh, the Florida program's in great hands. This is going to be really, really fun. It's about to get crazy in Gainesville. That's, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to this podcast had the same thoughts I did. I'll tell you another one. Charlie Pell was another one that I said, you know, that this could be a really big hire for Florida. Of course, I was a kid then. I just started high school, or I was a sophomore. But anyway, yeah, and that was just the stuff I knew about Pell and had been told about Pell. Of course, then the recruiting violations came around, and we all know where that went. But, you know, he helped set up the Florida program and, you know, did some really nice things at Florida. Obviously, there were some really bad things as well. I also wanted to mention, when I was talking about these all Sunbelt Conference players and the fact that he went from 3 in year 1 to 9 the past 2 years, and of course we'll see what happens this year, but among that, remember Lewis, the quarterback, very nice job developing him, and this guy has been really good for them. And also, last year, they had 4 offensive linemen. 4 of their 5 offensive linemen were either on the first or second team All Sunbelt Conference team. And again, that kind of gives you a hint. I think it really speaks well of what a coach is doing. Because remember, guys, I just named the teams that are in this conference. There's some competition there when you're talking about Coastal Carolina and what they've been able to do in recent years. App State, Arkansas State, Troy. Yeah, this is a pretty competitive conference. I'm also real curious, obviously, as everybody is, what's he going to do about coordinators? Now, I know Oklahoma State 24/7 Sports had a piece out there that he looks like he's going after possibly Jim Knowles, who is the offensive coordinator at Oklahoma State, defensive coordinator at Oklahoma State, or Doug Belk, who is a really kind of a young up-and-comer over at Houston. He's the DC over at Houston. And Belk was with Napier over at Alabama. Before that, he was at Valdosta State. So a lot of Georgia roots there for Belk. He hasn't been at Houston long, but I think that's an important place to go to, because for people that don't know, Billy Napier is a Georgia guy. He's from up in Northeast Georgia, not too far from Chattanooga. And that's where he played high school ball. He's got a lot of contacts up there. And, you know, that, as we all know, Georgia recruiting, the Peach State, is a hotbed for recruiting and not a bad guy to have on your list. But you also mentioned some guys that he plucked while at Alabama or coached up at Alabama. And I'm sure he has a relationship with some of the coaches in Florida, because – you know, we've seen a few quality players out of the Sunshine State make their way to Tuscaloosa.
And, you know, not just that. He's had to recruit the state of Louisiana. Now, mm-hmm. It's a little different because, you know, with LSU being there, if they want a kid, they're going to get that kid. So he's had to find different ways to set up pipelines and, you know, find kids in the nook and cranny of a very talented state. So that really sets it up too, you know, being able to recruit, you know, the states he's been to already as a major college assistant. And now as a head coach, he's probably got some connections to the state of Louisiana, because, you know, there's some talent there. A guy like Justin Jefferson was a dude who was very not highly rated coming out of high school. And now he's a starting wide receiver on, you know, the Minnesota Vikings after just, you know, 1 or 2 really successful years at LSU. And so that's the thing. You know, the Doug Belk thing, you mentioned him, you know, something about that is, you know, you would think with Cincinnati being as good as they are, number one team in total defense would be the Bearcats, but it's actually the Houston Cougars at 298 yards a game. They actually allow the third fewest passing yards, 191, but they also allow the fewest rushing yards out of anybody in the AAC at 97 yards a game.
Wow.
So they have a pretty good defense there in Houston under Dayton Holgorsen.
Very nice. So one thing that a lot of Florida fans want to know, and of course we do in the media as well, is, okay, so we're looking at coordinators. Obviously, there would be quite a few names in play coming over to Florida because we've seen some programs make changes and guys are moving around as they always do this time of the year. Who might he keep from the Florida staff? So as I look at this, I'm gonna give you two names right off the top, and then I'm sure I'd like to get your take on it and follow up on it. Christian Robinson would be – well, I said I'd do two. Christian Robinson, Tim Brewster. Obviously, Brewster – a lot of recruiting ties. He's got that Miami-Dade area. Robinson, of course, has, I think, the Tampa area. And we all know what he's done recruiting. He's done a nice job coaching up linebackers. Get your take on them. And then are there other coaches on this staff that you would think are in serious contention for him to keep in Gainesville?
With a guy like Tim Brewster, it's interesting to see how it plays out, because you know the tight end production has not been what it was after the last 2 years. So you have to figure out whether that was because of Kyle Pitts. Was Kyle Pitts good because of Tim Brewster? Were the tight ends this year not as good because of Tim Brewster, the scheme, or the quarterback that was taking snaps? I definitely do agree with you, Christian Robinson. I was under the impression he is a Todd Grantham guy, so I wonder if Grantham gets another job somewhere, whether he goes, or depending on, you know, who the defensive coordinator is, if they let him make some decisions in terms of what staff he wants in. Speaking of which, with guys I would think would have a shot at staying, I mean, you have to give some consideration to a guy like, you know, Wesley McGriff and a guy like Jules Montanar, because the secondary – I feel like is better than what it was, you know, the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and McGriff especially. I mean, you look at his recruiting ability. Montanar has done a nice job as well. He's done some nice things with the corners, although I'd like to see more development from the corners, to be honest with you. I think you've seen a little bit here and there, but I'd like to see some better play across the boards. Typically, you see a change like this, 1 to 2 guys is what you expect to stay. We've thrown a few names out there at you. Doesn't mean we think they're all going to stay. Don't get us wrong. But we're just kind of throwing some names out there and seeing what sticks. If there were more than 2 guys from this staff that stay, I would be surprised.
I agree with you. I mean, that's the head coaches are going to hire who they want to hire, you know, and they know the guys who they want and they can trust or have relationships with and think they could be good. You know, I do think he's got to keep some guys just to get acclimated to the job. You know, that way he's not learning on the job. He'll be learning on the job regardless, but, you know, he'll want to keep some guys to kind of teach him the nuances of being at a place like Florida as the head man, or just, you know, just operational, logistical things too. So yeah. I would expect some guys to stay on, you know, but like you said, no more than 2 though. I don't think more than two would stay. And you know, like I said, guys are going to want to hire who they want. There's been a couple who I think are some, you know, that came out. I read a article by Bob Redman on 24/7 Sports listed who he thinks were some top candidates, or not top candidates, but you know, some guys who would be really great hires or have some connections either to Florida or to Billy Napier. Of course, number one guy threw out there was Tom Herman as the offensive coordinator. How that happens, I have no idea. A guy who I really would like, and I said this, I've mentioned it several times, but I got like Willie Korn at Coastal Carolina.
Yeah, he was at Clemson. I remember him at Clemson.
Yeah, he was a quarterback under Billy Napier. He's the co-offensive coordinator. He's been the quarterback's coach at Coastal, so he's coached a guy like Grayson McCall, turned their offense into what it is, along with their other co-OC and with Jamie Chadwell. So I think that would, I've talked about how much fun their offense is. So that would be a really nice thing to see in Gainesville. If it sticks, let's hope so. Another guy I think a lot of people have clamored to come back to Florida, a guy like Robert Gillespie, you know, who's at Alabama. He's running backs coach there, one of their top recruiters, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, you'd love to see a guy get a shot to come back to his alma mater, but that depends on how much Alabama is willing to pay him to stay.
Yeah, and I'll give you another one. Phil Troutwine, offensive line coach, yeah. Penn State. Bring him back. Gillespie, he's sitting pretty right now at Bama, though. I'll tell you, he is sitting pretty up there.
Yeah, he's not wanting for much right now as the Rock running backs coach.
No, not at all. So a few names there. Man, there was one other name I was thinking of as well. And there are so many out there, so many quality guys. So it's going to be a lot of fun to see how this staff shakes up. But I'll tell you what, it isn't going to take him long because he knows he's going to have to hit the road and flip some kids. And he's going to have a staff that's able to do that. So in terms of strength and conditioning, that's going to be his first hire. That's going to be his most important hire. I shouldn't say it'll be his first hire. He may already have that guy. And it could be Mark Hawk, who is at Louisiana right now. 6 years at Alabama under Scott Cochran. He was at Florida State under Jimbo Fisher. He was at Georgia under Mark Richt for a year. He was at Texas A&M under Kevin Sumlin for a year. I know that doesn't do anything for anybody. But look, that's a lot of experience and a lot of big programs. And you look at that Louisiana team, and they look pretty doggone good. I know I've already heard from some people, Florida got to keep Nick Savage. They got to keep Nick Savage. Guys, that rarely ever happens where a new coach comes in and they're going to keep the strength and conditioning coach. That rarely, rarely ever happens. But keep an eye on a guy named Mark Hawk, the strength and conditioning guy over at Louisiana, who, again, has been under some pretty good coaches, including 6 years at Alabama under a guy named Scott Cochran, who ran that program at Alabama.
I would agree that it would be great to see Nick Savage stay at Florida. Like you said, that is something that I don't know if that ever, you know, that's something that rarely ever happens in the sport. Guys kind of know who they want to be their strength guy. And those are guys who follow them from, you know, job to job, if I'm not mistaken. So I think, you know, if he's not dead set on somebody, let him interview Nick Savage. See if Nick Savage is a guy he wants to have on the strength and conditioning staff. But if he's got a guy, I don't know, made up with, you know, Hawk, then there's not much people can do about it. But I do know one thing is that all the players are very much on board with Nick Savage staying at Florida. You tell me, Mark, what are some guys, on the Louisiana staff who will probably make their way to Gainesville, or some guys who could get consideration to be on the staff here?
Yeah, I think there are about three of them who could possibly be in play. Don't know if Jeff Norrin will be one of them, though. He's an offensive line coach. He graduated from Arkansas. He has coached at Arkansas. He's coached at Alabama for a while. He was at Auburn. So he's been around a little bit. And I spoke earlier about 2 years ago, or was it last year, I'm sorry, where the Raging Cajuns had four of their offensive linemen, four of the five offensive linemen were on either the first or second team All Sun Belt Conference team. He was not the offensive line coach then. He is in his first year with Napier. So, you know, that's who knows? Who knows what could happen there? And, of course, you know, you mentioned a guy like Troutwine. I don't even know if they know each other. But know that there are some people who would whisper in his ear, hey, Phil Troutwine, check him out up at Penn State. He's a former Florida guy. And, oh, by the way, he's listed among one of the top recruiters in the Big Ten. So that's a, you know, one you might want to look into. Wes Neighbors, also coaching the safeties. He was at Alabama, played at Alabama, of course, as many of you remember. He was there on that 2009 national championship team at Bama. He might have been there in 11 as well. I'm trying to think. He was there. I think he did play on the Alabama team then, and then he started coaching in 2012 at Alabama. But he began as a GA at Alabama, worked his way into an internship, and did some stuff for them. From 2012 to 2017, He was at Alabama coaching special teams, outside linebackers. He worked with them. He was working to scout opponents through that time. After leaving Alabama, and he left Alabama and went with Lane Kiffin to FAU. So Kiffin thought a lot of him. He ends up going to FAU and coached the safeties for a couple years. Then he spent a year at USF in 2020 before leaving this past year for, and now he is at Louisiana. So, I mean, this is a guy that's been around a bit. I'm going to have to go through the list, to be honest with you guys, to see who else might be from that staff where they can go. But typically, you don't see so you won't see wholesale guys coming over. Dan Mullen brought a lot of guys from Mississippi State. That was one of the biggest groups I've ever seen a head coach bring over. Obviously, there have been some others. Scott Frost, look what he did at Nebraska. But, again, typically you don't see that. You'll see three, maybe four, but typically around the number I think would be around three coaches that come with you from your previous stop. And that's kind of good. That's going to be guys who can absolutely recruit. I can't think of the running back coach over at Louisiana, but he has done a terrific job as well. He's been over there the entire time with Napier, and this guy's done a nice job of coaching up some running backs. Keep an eye on him because he may be a guy that may be a running back coach at the University of Florida. Jaluk is his name, I believe. Jaluk. Yep. And anyway, I'm sorry guys, I didn't add him to my notes, and I should have, but I do remember him when I was reading things over and looking up some stuff on Louisiana. But yeah, that may be another guy that you kind of look at real closely that may be coming with him.
Yeah, he's coached guys who are now, guys are starting running back in the NFL, and Elijah Mitchell, he's a sixth round pick, but now he's top of the food chain at, for the 49ers right now. So, I mean, if he's been there the whole time, it's hard to think he wouldn't come with him.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. So, there are a couple other guys, or a few on that staff who are either in their first year or second year coaching with him. But I mentioned Wes Neighbors because he'd been with him before at Alabama. So, and that's kind of how this stuff works, as everybody knows. Your familiarity is a big thing because you want to know how a guy's going to work, how he's going to recruit. You want to know how he's going to play. Does he get along with the other staff members? Is he a cancer among the staff? So you'll see that quite a bit.
I'm right there with you. It's all about it's all about fit. Fit is very important for a staff. Sometimes getting the best guys in every single position doesn't really, work out all the time. You need guys who are going to work as a cohesive unit.
Yeah. And, of course, one thing for everybody to kind of follow over the next few weeks is the transfer portal. The transfer portal is something that a lot of people are going to have to follow, not only who's Florida bringing in, but who opts to leave. How did this team meeting go when they meet with Coach Napier and maybe some of these other assistant coaches as they find out who's coming? There's a lot. There's so much at play right here. But, outside of that, there are a lot of the recruits who seem to be perfectly fine with it. This looks like it's a good hire. I've looked at him. He looks pretty good. Or, from everything I've heard, he looks good. He knows my high school coach. Another kid said he knows my high school coach. And, those are always positives.
Yeah, I mean, you hear so many times about guys talking about, I just wanted to be Gator. I wanted to be at the University of Florida. I was just listening to a Twitter space today that had, a guy like, Randy Russell on, who was actually a commit during Dan's transition to being the football coach. He never played down to football due to a heart issue. But, he spoke about where he felt like he was at a point where he just wanted to be at Florida. And the coaching change didn't do much to affect whether he wanted to be there or not.
I think Keewon Ratliff will probably be that guy, director of player personnel.
Another important one is director of recruiting. See who's taking over the recruiting office, who will be there. things like that.
Oh, no question. And I did look at the guy doing that from Louisiana, but they had no information on him whatsoever. None. So there really wasn't anything that I could bring any kind of insight to anybody here. So any other thoughts right here? Is there something we've overlooked or that you feel like needs to be mentioned about the hire of Napier, maybe the assistant coach search? It is interesting that we're not going to have a press conference on this or him meet the media for a week because he's going to be coaching Louisiana in the Sun Belt Championship game.
Yeah, you're not going to hear a first word from Billy Napier come out of his mouth till about Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening when he gets here or when he gets to Gainesville.
And I like that. I like the fact that he's going to stay with his team and coach him a championship game. I also like the fact that Florida is going bowling. And here's why. We already knew who the head coach is. He can convey what he wants to look at, what he wants to see. It's going to give a lot of the young guys, freshmen, sophomores, a few extra practice sessions to go and work and do some things because that's typically how it's done during bowl weeks. You're going to spend the week of the game really focusing with the starters. The 2 weeks before that, 3 weeks before that, whatever. And, of course, this time Florida doesn't have very long because it's a lower-tier bowl. But it's going to give some of those young guys an opportunity to get some things on film for Napier and his staff to look at. And that is very important. It really is very important. And that's something that certainly I'll be interested to ask him about when he gets here. You know, there are so many questions that he's going to be asked and so many things that you want to see. And hopefully he'll be one of these guys that opens up spring practice to the media and hurts, hopefully for a few of them, to the fans.
I don't think that's going to happen. From what I heard, he's not one of them kind of guys.
I'm not asking for the whole spring, and I don't think there are those guys anymore, but I'm talking one or two, you know, just to kind of get things going a little bit. When I say that, I'm not saying it'll be a scrimmage. I'm saying that it would be maybe the first practice, second practice. You get 15, 20 minutes, and then they kick you out, which is pretty much what happened to us with McElwain.
Yeah, happened with Dan Mullen, too.
Yep, and then we were gone. We were no more.
I think, yeah. But it'll be interesting to see what he says, what he does, because, I mean, like I've said before, Dan Mullen was the guy who came in and said all the right things as a, you know, guy entering the head coaching job. Interesting to see what his message is going to be in his first press conference. Albeit every single coach in the history of America is undefeated in first press conference because, well, I mean, nobody knows anything about you. And the only guy who's probably ever lost one was probably Adam Gase when he had his first head coaching press conference. You hear all the great things about a coach right now. Because guess what? He's undefeated, technically, as the Florida football head coach. When they lose their first game, we'll see, you know, how he reacts, how the fans react, what they think about it. Because I remember when Dan Mullen lost his first game, and people were saying, oh, maybe Dan Mullen's not the right guy because he lost to Kentucky. What happens if Billy Napier comes out and loses to Kentucky? We'll see what happens there.
Yeah, we'll see if Mark Stoops is at Kentucky. I mean, I would think so, but man, the way things are moving and hopping, who in the world knows?
Yeah.
Obviously, we want to turn the page for a few minutes to the Florida State game. It was ugly, but it's a Gator victory, and that is sweet anytime you can beat Florida State.
Yeah, you know, I think this was obviously a bad football game, but I think the defense played a pretty good game for about three and a half quarters until that fourth quarter when Florida State was throwing it almost every down and they scored those two touchdowns. But, I mean, the defense was able to hold really another what I felt like was a poor showing from the offense. Of course, they were handicapped by, you know, three interceptions from Emory Jones, who, you know, really just does seem like he's regressed a lot. I don't know if I've said that before or if I've said he's been about the same, but you know, it was, you hate to see a guy like that struggle, like I've said before too. But it was nice to see, you know, the coaches see guys struggling and make the change, go to a guy like Anthony Richardson, who was able to lead some touchdown drives. And Gators were able to get a win over a rival in what was a down year against a rival that had a lot of momentum, probably thought they were going to be able to win the ball game coming into Gainesville. And, you know, now they're going to have to sit at home, and the Gators are going to be able to potentially go to a bowl game depending on whether they accept the invitation or not. I've heard there's some speculation or some rumblings that they might do it, or whether it's worth it to go to a bowl game. We'll see there.
If you're Florida State, how bad do you really feel about this? Mullen's gone. Two assistant coaches are gone. The program is just really in a bad spot right now. They're trying to hire a head coach. We think we know who it is. And you guys get beat. After you guys have been on a bit of a winning streak here, you came in with some momentum. Florida came in with no momentum. And you guys got beat. What does that say for the Florida State program? And they both kind of laughed and said, well, yeah, that's exactly what it says about our program. And I thought, yeah. Tough game to watch. Emory Jones, and I feel like a broken record. I hate it for the young man, but Dan Mullen and Florida, and now even post-Dan Mullen, really, really struggle with Emory behind center, trying to figure out what to do with regards to the passing game in the red zone. We've seen, what, two, three times this year where they flipped it to Whittemore, and he throws the ball. But Emory Jones just really seems, when everything gets packed in, when everything gets tight, he really, really seems to struggle to make a good decision with the football in the red zone. And that has been a Florida problem all year long. We saw even last year in mop-up duty for Kyle Trask, there were some issues, bad decision-making, and, you know, you're right. I mean, the guy just really, you feel for him, but he really, in some ways he's developed, and in other ways where he really needs to develop, he hasn't. So you feel sorry for the young man, but he put the Florida defense in some bad positions. He really did. Now, obviously, a couple of those were in the end zone, but again, you're turning the ball right back over to Florida State and giving them another opportunity. So Florida State only ran 66 plays, but Florida left points on the field. They left points on the field with those turnovers, when really that game should have been put away earlier.
Yeah, you speak on the defense having, you know, being put in some bad spots. I do want to mention, you know, a guy like Brenton Cox, whom we've felt like has had tremendous upside, has tremendous talent, and can be a difference maker on defense. It's been a little up and down for him, but, I mean, he might have got about, you know, three or four games, maybe, you know, four or five games worth of sacks in on that game against a guy who's really, really hard to sack in Jordan Travis.
Yeah, exactly. And Hopper played a great game too, I thought, overall. From what I saw of Hopper, I really was impressed with him on the defensive side of things. So, you know, Florida made some things happen on the offensive side. Gamble with that beautiful touchdown run. Of course, he had three receptions. We finally had a Damian Pierce sighting. That would be my first hot, well, my second hot take after Emory Jones turning the ball over in situations where it should have been a win for Florida. Damian Pierce, only 12 carries, but still he led the team with 12 carries. And just the things that he does to motivate a team, as hard as he runs, and he's a bruiser, he's a bull. And boy, sometimes stuff like that can not only fire up your offense, it can fire up your whole team. It certainly fires up the stadium.
Yeah, I think with Damian Pierce, he ended his career in the Swamp the same way he started it, as the team's closer. I mean, how many times we see him as a freshman break off these big runs, you know, score touchdowns late, and just kind of break a team's will when there might have been some inkling of them being able to make a comeback. And, you know, I just, like you said, he just runs hard. And when you see a guy like that play so hard and love the game of football, it's hard not to want to play for him. And the best run he made all day, you know, didn't even count because of, you know, a rule that is made for player safety. It's supposed to stop, you know, play is supposed to stop when the helmet goes off, supposed to be blown dead. You know, he being a football guy, it's hard to you know, just stop playing football unless somebody blows the whistle. He didn't hear one, so he kept playing. And, you know, made a really nice run in the end zone. Just sucks that it didn't count.
That's a dumb rule. I don't like that rule. I don't like that at all. I mean, I understand it's for safety, and you don't want people to continue playing and hit somebody to get hit in the head. You know, I get all that, but there's got to be another way to address that. And obviously, you know, you just don't penalize the team if the guy keeps running. Certainly get the officials in there as quick as you can to kind of limit what can be done. In the old days, they just let them play it out. We saw Earl Everett do that in the national championship game against Ohio State. That's one of the beautiful moments of Florida football. The other point I want to make, penalties. Yes, Florida committed a ton of penalties. So did Florida State. Both teams could have had double-digit penalties. Obviously, Florida did. I thought the officiating was horrible. My problem was this. Number one, let the kids play. Let the kids play. But there were things I think the officials could have done to clean up a little bit of the jawing back and forth, a little bit of the, you know, the punch being thrown here and there. We saw a few of those things. I think 75 from FSU threw a punch. I think it was him that threw a punch at one of the Florida defensive tackles and punched him in the gut. He didn't, no one caught that. So, you know, if they could have gotten a handle on the physical stuff and said, hey, look, guys, we're not taking any of that. We're going to let you play, but if you guys want to get chippy, if you guys want to get nasty and commit a personal foul, we'll ring you up on first personal fouls and we'll get you out of here. Outside of that, we're going to let you play. I would have much rather seen a game like that.
That's what happens when, you know, you're 5-6. Get the not so prominent broadcasters and the not so prominent officials, and that can really create a mess for you. Whether you're a guy watching it or, you know, you're someone actually in the game.
Yeah, broadcasting. I heard that was atrocious.
Yeah, I heard bad things about it too while I was covering the game.
I'm sure a lot of you out there can fill us in on some things. Yeah, shoot me a private message at McLeod Live. I would appreciate it. I want to hear some of this stuff. Although I did record the game, I just got to go back and watch it. But I'll be honest with you, I'm not going to have time to watch it tomorrow. So, any other final thoughts on this edition of the Gridiron Growl?
Yeah, just check out Grain the Gator. Should be up by the time this podcast is posted.
Do you have a grade for the officials that's going to be on there as well?
We'll think about it. It's not looking good for them right now, though. Definitely not getting credit.
Should be a strong grade for the fans. I mean, considering everything that's happened at Florida, I think a lot of people expected a lot of empty seats, but I got to give it to the Gator Nation. Man, they came out and they did a nice job of supporting this team.
Yeah, it was really impressive. A lot, you know, when we showed up for the game, probably about 45 minutes, not a lot of people there, 20 minutes before tip-off, before kickoff, you know, still not that many people. But I'm telling you, by about the first quarter or so, you know, like they say, that crowd's always late, but you know, they showed up really well for this game, and considering all that happened, you know, a lot of people still came in, and he did, you know, you saw specks of garnet and gold in different places, but you saw mostly blue and white and whatever people were wearing to keep themselves warm that day, and it was a pretty good turnout for the fans, that's for sure. I'm sure it's because, you know, tickets were cheap, people would get their family members in, but other than that, very impressive turnout.
Yeah, and again, a tip of the hat to all of you, because that means so much to a program. As down as Florida is right now, you guys came out, you guys supported the team, you guys let them know, hey, we're moving on, we're fine with you guys, we're heading into a different direction. I tip my hat to each and every one of you who made the effort to show up at the game and lend your voice, lend your support to this team. That doesn't happen everywhere, guys. It really doesn't. I've been in a lot of stadiums in my career, my 20-something years doing this, 24, and I'm telling you.
Yeah, pretty impressive, especially on Senior Day. Bet you the seniors really appreciated it.
Yep, exactly. All right, you can follow me on Twitter at McLeod Live. Remember, follow the Gridiron Growl on Twitter at gridiron_growl, and go to chomptalk.com for the latest on the University of Florida Gators. Hope everybody had a wonderful Thanksgiving. I know I did. Thus far, I've had three different places, and I've had Thanksgiving dinner three different times. So it's been great. I got to get my butt in the gym and work out a little bit. But hopefully everybody out there had a wonderful Thanksgiving, and we're all looking forward to Coach Napier coming in, and we're going to bring you as much information as we can dig up here to the podcast. And I have a couple people I will be contacting that should be able to enlighten us on some things, and we'll try to bring that to the next podcast. But that's all I have. Jake, if you want to take us out of here, thanks a lot, my friend.
Yes. Billy Ball returns to Gainesville, this time in football form. We'll see what happens, what Billy Napier says in his introductory press conference coming in about a week's time. And until that time for us to discuss it, for Mark McLeod, I'm Jake Hitt. We'll see you later.